Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications. This week's host, Robin Booker of The Western Producer, brings you reports from three major agriculture events held in Saskatoon in early January: Crop Week, Western Canadian Crop Production Show, and CropSphere. You'll hear stories about canary seed, how country of origin labeling could affect you as a grain farmer, plus the latest on climate change and soil on the Canadian prairies. All on this week's episode of Between the Rows.
Hello and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm Robin Booker, your host this week. This show was recorded on location at the three farm shows held in Saskatoon on the second week of January. Crop Week, Western Canadian Crop Production Show, and CropSphere are all held simultaneously in Saskatoon, making this an important week for the local farming community. Glacier Farm Media reporters attended sessions at each of these events, and this show is a collection of some of the interviews they conducted. Chuck Penner of Left Field Commodity Research provided a market outlook for canary seed and other competing crops during the Canary Seed Development Commission of Saskatchewan's annual conference. He told Western Producer reporter William Decay that although the canary seed market has been very quiet lately, there are some issues that could give it some spark.
Well, the canary seed market has been fairly quiet the last few years, and largely that's because Canadian farmers have been growing roughly the same amount of acres from year to year. And so yields have been decent. This year we saw a little bit of excitement earlier in the year, and that's because it got dry in Saskatchewan. But in the end of the day, yields turned out to be not too bad at all. And so prices came back down to roughly 20 cents per pound. And that seems to be kind of a floor price, because that's where farmers really decide, you know, I'm not going to sell it if it goes lower than that. So, you know, that's kind of the bottom end of the market. And so then looking ahead, you know, sometimes we look at some seasonal impacts and things like that. So there will likely be some modest seasonal strength going into the next 2, 3, 4 months or so. But not a whole lot of change. The one factor that could see some difference this year, the only other real exporter in the world is Argentina. And according to the government stats there, they've grown a lot less canary seed this year. And so that's just being harvested now. So we might start to see that impact coming along, because it'll give us the opportunity to export a little bit more into other South American countries like Brazil. They sometimes are a larger buyer. So that may provide a little bit of a spark to the market, but not a whole lot. And then, of course, you look ahead to, well, what are farmers going to plant this year? And canary seed, the current bids, it doesn't pencil out all that well. It's kind of a steady crop. So again, you know, acres might even dip a little bit this year. So as long as we have, you know, normal export demand, and it could be a little above normal with lower acres, we could actually see some actual life in the market as we get into 2018-19. So, you know, August, September, October forward, could see a little bit more life next year compared to the bit of a flat line that we've seen in the last 2 or 3 years.
That was the Western Producer's William Decay speaking with Chuck Penner of Left Field Commodity Research. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host, Robin Booker. In a few minutes, we'll be hearing the latest on climate change and soil on the Canadian prairies. But first, we have a story about how country of origin labeling is making a comeback. But this time, it's aimed at grain farmers. Cam Dahl of Cereal Canada presented at the Saskatchewan Winter Cereals Development Commission's meeting. Western Producer reporter Brian Cross asked Dahl when the country of origin labeling is due to take effect in Italy.
Right now, so we have the country of origin labeling regulations in Italy are proceeding, and we're seeing them coming into effect about mid-February. So product moving into Italy today would have to take into account the segregation and labeling requirements of the new law. Of course, over the last year, that's been accompanied by a public relations campaign that's been denigrating Canadian durum, specifically all imports going into Italy, but we are their largest largest supplier traditionally, and so there have been specific attacks on Canadian durum, whether that's around DON or ochratoxin A or glyphosate use, and that has had an impact, and we're seeing today that that in fact we're not getting new contracts signed for Italy.
Dell said, Italy's country of origin regulation will limit Canada's exports into the region, most notably with durum. But it's difficult to know how this market access issue will affect durum acres in Canada this spring.
Normally, Italy imports between 20 and 25% of the Canadian durum crop. So it is one of our largest customers. Outside of Algeria and Morocco, those are the biggest customers of Canadian durum. So when you're looking at a significant reduction removal of 20 to 25% of your market, that's going to have an impact. Right now, how many of these market access issues are Canadian producers facing? You know, at the same time, the same guys that are growing durum are also looking at growing lentils and looking at the protectionist activities of India. So, or whether it's blackleg issues going into China, we're facing a lot of these issues, and it's they're all going to have an impact, and it's probably the biggest issues facing our industry going forward are these market access issues.
Dell said it's time the Canadian government escalates its response to Italy's cool rules.
I have to give the government of Canada credit. We've had really strong support, whether it's Minister McCauley, who has raised these issues both with the European Commission as well as with Italy, or Minister Champagne has raised these issues. We've had really good support from our embassy in Rome and Brussels. I think at this time it's we need to start taking the next step and give notification that we will be challenging the country of origin regulations, whether that's through CETA or through the WTO.
That was Cam Dahl of Cereal Canada speaking with Brian Cross. This is Between the Rows. The Russian producer Sean Pratt was hanging out at the SAS Canola meeting where he spoke with Executive Director Janice Tranberg. Tranberg said grower groups in Western Canada want to increase canola consumption in Eastern Canada, specifically in Ontario.
Through the Canola Council of Canada, we've been monitoring sales off the shelves. So that's one of the measures we're using just to gauge how successful we are. In Saskatchewan and indeed in Western Canada, about 70% of users actually choose canola oil off the shelf, right? So they know what canola is, they know why they buy it, they choose it. In Ontario, we're around 30%, and we're actually trailing under vegetable oil. And indeed, even when we've done a little bit deeper research and we've asked them what canola is, they have no idea really what canola is. So what we're trying to do is get them to actively understand that canola is a Canadian, a local oil, right? That it's really healthy, that it's versatile for cooking, and to make that active choice on the shelves to choose canola oil. What the opportunity is, I mean, we can monitor off the shelf and change that, but I think it's also that bigger opportunity that comes to as consumers understand and use canola, then that translates into restaurants, into institutions, and thus far. So, actually saying numbers, what it's going to build, I can't give you a number. But
Tranberg said the grower group is working with influencers to attain its goal of increasing canola oil consumption.
Well, there's a lot of different ways, but we're working collectively with Manitoba and Alberta, and we have a banner called Canola Eat Well. So the idea is when we go out into Ontario, we won't talk about SAS canola, because really it's about canola. We want them to understand canola. So we're working collectively under the Canola Eat Well banner. And we're really targeting influencers, so we're targeting dietitians, as I said, dietitians of Canada. We're targeting Diabetes Canada. We work quite closely with them and their nutritionalists to help them to understand the health benefits of canola. We're working with chef associations. We're working with registered dietitians. So all of these different influencer organizations to help them understand the benefits, because then they influence others who have the purchasing power.
Right. Sean also talked to Dave Sefton, a farmer from Broadview, Saskatchewan, and Sask Flax director, who made a resolution at the Sask Canola AGM. The resolution calls on the provincial government to stop charging PST on insurance.
Well, back in April March or April of last year when the 2017 budget came down, the provincial government put provincial sales tax onto all insurance premiums, including crop insurance and life insurance, and they all affect producers in a pretty large way. At the leadership panel that was held in Regina on last Wednesday, the 3rd of January, all of the candidates responded to the question about the PST on insurance by saying that they would review it, and again, as I said, most if not all agreed that it probably should be removed from the income source or from be exempted under PST. So I thought about it over the past weekend and determined that probably the agriculture industry should first recognize that the leadership candidates have talked about this and have talked about reviewing it, and just to simply encourage them to go forward in their deliberations for the 2018 provincial budget, and in fact exempt insurance from PST and therefore reduce that cost that can run into the tens of thousands of dollars for individual farm producers, depending on the size of their operation.
Now, do you want it removed just for agriculture operations, or just blanket?
They talked in terms of all insurance premiums.
Yeah.
Because as some of the financial advisors say, you're really taxing people from protecting their property and protecting their property and putting life insurance in place to protect their families from financial disaster if there's a death in the family. So
you say it could end up costing the farmer tens of thousands of dollars?
Oh, yeah. I mean, crop insurance premiums can range anywhere from $10,000 to $100,000. Mm-hmm. So 6% on $100,000 is $6,000.
Yeah.
So it's
adds up quick.
It adds up, and that's just one.
Yeah.
I mean, young farmers have to carry life insurance on their debt.
Right.
You know, and that debt can be in millions of dollars. And so you take premiums on that, and then the provincial tax, there's another upwards of $1,000.
Right.
And then machinery insurance. I mean, one combine at $500,000, that's a pretty significant premium.
Mm.
And then, of course, the PST on top of it. And that's just one piece of equipment.
Right. So do you... How soon do you want to see this happen?
Well, they talked in terms at the leadership panel in terms of reviewing it for the 2018 budget year. So, you know, I would hope that they would look at it in terms of the 2018 budget, whether they reduce totally the PST on insurance or a portion of the premium on insurance. I mean, that'll be an issue that they need to deal with in their look at being fiscally responsible. But it's a big expense.
Right.
It's a new expense.
Yeah.
And it came all at once.
This is Between the Rows. I'm Robin Booker. Earlier in the week, I was over at the Western Development Museum, attending the Saskatchewan Soil Conservation Association's 30th annual conference. It was titled Soil Health in a New Climate. Dr. Dave Sochin is a professor of geography and environmental studies at the University of Regina. He described how climate change is likely to affect prairie weather patterns by the middle of this century.
We cannot predict the future, but there are models that we use that simulate the climate of the Earth, and they work fairly well. So we take information from the models for the future. And they show that in Saskatchewan, we can expect our winters to be warmer, and they have been getting warmer. That's a fact. We still get brutally cold weather, but in general, on average, the winters are warmer than they used to be. And so that trend seems to be continuing. And also, our climate is getting wetter, but much of that increase in wetness is also in the wintertime. So most of the climate change is occurring in winter.
And you talked a little bit about how growers might adapt to these changes. And how could growers adapt to this change of the weather patterns?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think growers already are adapting. Growers are the most adaptable people in our society. Otherwise, we wouldn't be farming in such a hostile climate. And for the most part, the climate changes are relatively good in that if it's getting warmer, and the growing season is getting longer and we're getting moisture in winter, that's provides the potential for higher yields. However, it's going to require some adaptation to take advantage of the warm and wetter winter, because we don't grow anything in winter. Well, we can seed some fall crops, but we have to store the water that is available in the wintertime, and the best way to do that is to retain it in the soil. Now, this is a conference on soil conservation, so the message is healthy soils are the best possible adaptation to a changing climate.
I also caught up with Dr. Mario Tanuta after his presentation about carbon sequestration, taxes, and greenhouse gas reduction targets. Tanuta leads the Soil Ecology Laboratory at the University of Manitoba, and he said it's unlikely carbon sequestration on farmland will be used in any national greenhouse gas reduction program. Dr. Tanuta, why don't you think we'll see carbon sequestration in any national carbon policy?
Well, it's not that it's definite that we will not. It's just a challenge to incorporate it into a national policy, because carbon sequestration would need to be applied across the board, so it would be forested systems as well as some agricultural systems, and there's uncertainty as to the carbon sequestration in the Canadian forest, because it is so variable because of forest fires, and as a result it becomes very complex to figure out some kind of a simple, fair, equitable policy with carbon sequestration for the whole country and across different sectors. So that's one challenge. The other is that carbon sequestration would be relative to 2005 rates. So it's anything after 2005 that could be considered in terms of carbon sequestration. And it's a bit unsure at the moment as to how much our soils and prairies are accumulating carbon. We do believe they're accumulating carbon still by doing direct seeding and removal of fallow, and the benefit of rotations, particularly inclusion of pulses in the rotations and yield increases from that. So it's a bit uncertain. Are the rates really high still, or are they starting to taper off with time? That's another aspect. Probably a third would be that we can put carbon in soil by increasing soil organic matter by using such as no-till, direct seeding, and reduced fallow frequency, good crop rotation, addition of manures, using potentially even cover crops. However, we could also lose that organic matter if we had to till the soil or if we changed our rotation. So that's a thing that we would have to address as well, in terms of, do we need to worry about if we have to change the land use and then it loses carbon, and then you've received carbon credits for it in the past. So there's a bit of complexity there. It's much more complex than nitrogen in terms of reducing N2O emissions, I tell you.
And you mentioned that maybe politics might play a little bit of a role in say, carbon credits, for instance, as the eastern producers aren't as carbon neutral or carbon friendly as some of the western producers.
Yes. So we don't like to have one group versus another group, and regionally in Canada, or even sector against a sector. It's just the way we are. So it's adds to complexity. So the information compiled by Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada is indicating that carbon organic matter rates of gain in eastern Canada, so particularly Ontario, Quebec, Maritimes, and agricultural areas, are actually losing organic matter, whereas in the prairies we're gaining organic matter. So it's a bit of a dilemma then. If you provide carbon credits to one regional group, does that mean the other group, another part of the region of Canada, has to provide money? I'm not a politician, and I hate the politics side of things because I'm a scientist, but I just acknowledge that it adds to the complexity.
You also, during a question at towards the end of your talk, someone asked about basically looking at carbon or looking at the overall greenhouse gas emissions on a per unit basis of production. And you said that there's some problems with that.
Yes, yes. So, you know, we can use a ratio of the amount of yield we get to how much gas or greenhouse gas, particularly N2O, was emitted for production of that yield. And ideally what we want to be doing is be more efficient. So produce the same amount of yield with less gas or keep increasing our yields with producing less gas. I think everybody agrees that that's the direction we need to go. So I agree with that. However, if we only take that approach, we could still overall be increasing our greenhouse gas emissions in terms of nitrous oxide emissions because our crops are increasing their yield every year and on average. Okay, so we have an increase in yields because of the new genetics and various things. And so if we just looked at this efficiency basis, we could still get an overall increase in N2O emissions, for example, because of an increase in yield. So I guess I was just asking the members here today at the Saskatchewan Soil Conservation Association meeting to think about that. And that, well, if we really want to make reductions, tangible reductions, we actually have to decrease the total emissions. And that's what the targets are in terms of if we're going to be reducing greenhouse gases to a certain level to help reduce the rise in temperatures, global temperatures. And so I also think that in some cases, the efficiency approach makes us relax a little bit. Whereas if we say, okay, we're going to reduce greenhouse, the N2O emissions for per acre, means we got to work a lot harder. And we got to do the research, come up with the practices, do the extension, find out the costs, profitability, the economics, those practices. I think it can be done. It just means we need to make an effort to really, really do it.
I know there's some frustration for growers who say we're already more efficient than other producing areas, that we're producing less carbon for our grain, but they're not really getting rewarded for that. What might you say to them?
I understand. I understand big time. Sure. Because, you know, we've been innovators globally in terms of building soil organic matter on the prairies with movement to direct seeding, low disturbance seeding, with reduction of the fallow. And then we've been innovators in diversifying our rotation, particularly including pulses in their rotation, which has a great bonus for the fact that the use of nitrogen over the rotation has decreased because of that. Secondly, there's a yield increase because of the rotation effect of including these crops on our wheats and canola and so forth that follow. And that's fantastic. And so I absolutely agree with them that we've made great strides here. And what I would say to them is that you've been an innovator in the past. You've been a global leader in the past. We can still keep doing that innovation. And Canada definitely does have an advantage. Prairies does have an advantage because of our direct seeding and our pulses in the rotation. And these are fantastic assets because as our yields keep increasing for our crops, nitrogen fertilizer rates go up for, let's say, for canola and wheat. So inclusion of those pulses and the carbon sequestration with direct tilling is mitigating that extra N2O from the required need for more fertilizer for those crops.
That was Mario Tenuta, a soil and climate researcher with the University of Manitoba. That's all we have for you this week on Between the Rows, but we'll be back again next week from the Manitoba Ag Days. Thanks for joining us. I'm Robin Booker.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.